A perfect wife. Advertisement. The general reader whose attention has not been specially drawn to the subject, which these volumes aim to illustrate, the condition of the people, might suspect that the writer had been tempted to some exaggeration in the scenes which he has drawn, and the impressions which he has wished to convey. He thinks it therefore due to himself to state that he believes there is not a trait in this work for which he has not the authority of his own observation, or the authentic evidence which has been received by royal commissions and parliamentary committees. But while he hopes he has alleged nothing which is not true, he has found the absolute necessity of suppressing much that is genuine. For so little do we know of the state of our own country, that the air of improbability that the whole truth would inevitably throw over these pages might deter many from their perusal. Grosvenor Gate, May Day, 1845. Volume 1. Book 1. Chapter 1.
I'll take the odds against Caravan.
In ponies?
Dan.
And Lord Milford, a young noble, entered in his book the bet which he had just made with Mr. Latour, a grey-headed member of the Jockey Club. It was the eve of the Derby of 1837. In a vast and golden saloon that in its decorations would have become, and in its splendour would not have disgraced, Versailles in the days of the Grand Monarch, were assembled many whose hearts beat at the thought of the morrow, and whose brains still laboured to control its fortunes to their advantage.
"They say that Caravan looks puffy,"
lisped in a low voice a young man, lounging on the edge of a boule table that had once belonged to a Mortimut, and dangling a rich cane with affected indifference in order to conceal his anxiety from all, except the person whom he addressed.
"They are taking 7-2 against him freely over the way," was the reply. "I believe it's all right."
"Do you know, I dreamed last night something about Mango," continued the gentleman with the cane, and with a look of uneasy superstition.
His companion shook his head.
"Well," continued the gentleman with the cane, "I have no opinion of him. I gave Charles Egremont the odds against Mango this morning. He goes with us, you know. By the by, who is our fourth?"
"I thought of Milford," was the reply in an undertone. "What say you?"
"Milford is going with St. James and Punch Hughes."
"Well, let us come into supper, and we shall see some fellow we like."
So saying, the companions, taking their course through more than one chamber, entered an apartment of less dimensions than the principal saloon, but not less sumptuous in its general appearance. The gleaming lustres poured a flood of soft yet brilliant light over a plateau glittering with gold plate, and fragrant with exotics embedded in vases of rare porcelain. The seats on each side of the table were occupied by persons consuming, with a heedless air, delicacies for which they had no appetite, while the conversation in general consisted of flying phrases referring to the impending event of the great day that had already dawned.
"Come from Lady St. Julian's, Fitz,"
said a youth of very tender years, and whose fair visage was as downy and as blooming as the peach from which, with a languid air, he withdrew his lips to make this inquiry of the gentleman with the cane.
"Yes. Why, were you not there?"
"I never go anywhere," replied the melancholy Cupid. "Everything bores me so."
"Well, will you go to Epsom with us tomorrow, Alfred?"
said Lord Fitzheron.
"I take Berners and Charles Egremont, and with you our party will be perfect."
"I feel so cursed blasé," exclaimed the boy, in a tone of elegant anguish.
"It will give you a fillip, Alfred," said Mr. Berners. "Do you all the good in the world?"
"Nothing can do me good," said Alfred, throwing away his almost untasted peach. "I should be quite content if any..."